All right, well,
welcome back, Taxation is Theft. I've got my friend Jamie Belasia here.
Peace.
Also known as the DWI dude and the 420 dude.
Dude for short.
The dude. Man, if you ever get this guy is the asshole that goes in and ruins the cop's day when you get busted for like a drug charge or a
only if they allow it and insist on it. I spoke at a law enforcement course a few years ago, and I was asked to bring the defense attorney's perspective to these officers that were in training. And these were seasoned officers, who all of which had testified numerous times in the past. And I told them the number one rule, if I wanted to point out things that would hurt me and help them, I said, just tell the truth. If you tell the truth, you never have to cover anything up. You never have to worry about remembering the mistruth that you spoke. If you don't know the answer to a question that you're being asked by a defense attorney, just say, I don't know or I don't remember. Don't try to fudge and make something up, because I have won more not guilties in trial due to the misbehavior of officers on the stand and in their testimony than in any other category, I would say, either by them angering the jurors at their attitudes or by their blatant misrepresentation of the facts. You got a videotape and they start talking about things that happened, things that were said, and my favorite tool is to hand them the remote and I'll point out something that they testified about during their direct testimony. Now I'm on cross. I hand them the remote and say, you said X, Y, Z. Find that on the videotape. Hit the remote and stop it. And let's play it for the jury. And they just sit there. And they'll actually sit there and go over like three or four times during the time period where they said something happened. It never happens. So it's not going to appear mysteriously on the video. Just incredible. I think that goes to show, though, the tremendous amount of pressure that is put on police officers by the prosecutors and by our society to not only make arrests, but then to make arrests stick with a conviction in court. I always thought as a police officer, when I was a cop back in from 78 until 1990, they told me when I was first starting off, just tell the truth, make your arrest when you need to make an arrest. If it falls apart in court because of whatever reason, don't worry about it. If somebody who's committing crimes repeatedly, and hopefully it's crimes that should be crimes, not free behavior that is being characterized as crimes.
Possession
by
of
statutes, yeah, a pot case or
anything.
Something like that. Then you'll get them next time. And I know that can be applied a little strangely, of we'll get them next time. If it's a serious crime, like a crime against a child, a real crime against a child, a sex crime, then that should reinforce in the officer's attitude that he should do the very best job in the investigation, preparation, reporting, analyzing, and testifying. He should make no mistakes, because we're depending upon them to do that job.
So what do you think, I'm just checking the system there. You say that you've told me before, the least reliable testimony is an eyewitness testimony, something like that.
Because we all have biases within us. Police officers are trained to be perceptive and to look for certain things. Your average citizen, they can sometimes be more startled by behavior or not be concentrating on remembering things. That's something as simple as when you go into a convenience store, as you're leaving, if you notice there's a tape measure on the doorway, like 4 foot, 5 foot, 6 foot.
I never noticed that.
That's either for the cameras or for the clerk, because that started back in the 70s when there weren't video cameras everywhere, so that a clerk could look up and see the robber going out the door and say, oh, he was between 5.5 and 6 foot tall. And then so they don't go arrest, and he was a black male, well, typically, you know, it works the other way around. Let's say it's a white male who's 6 foot tall. You don't want the police out there arresting a black guy who's 5 foot tall just because he's a convenient target to arrest. But without that perception being taught to the clerk, they don't have it. They wouldn't think of that. They wouldn't think even to compare the height to the rack of newspapers or whatever. But just things like, if you just think about, if you can think of someone that you know fairly well right now, but you haven't seen them, let's say in about a week, to make it a little bit more fair, write down their height, their weight, hair color, eye color, and some other descriptive thing about them that makes them set apart from anyone else. And then the next time you see them, compare their actual appearance to what you wrote down. And this is someone you should be really familiar with, because I'm letting you pick your own target here. If you want to do something even more challenging, go into the next time you buy gas, if you happen to go to the convenience store or whatever, 3 days later, write down the guy's height, weight, facial features, things like that that would identify that person. And you're not under any trauma. You're not scared. You're not witnessing a crime or something like that going on. So eyewitness identification, they've done studies on it. It's one of the worst ways to identify someone possible. I mean, they're even today, they're drawing forth the problems with fingerprint identification. Yes, we all have different fingerprints. We all have different fingerprints, but in any number of people, if you only look for 4 or 5 different points, many of us have those points. It's the total fingerprint that separates us.
That's like
us.
The thing with Apple's new iPhone. It uses your face now to unlock the phone, and it does it with same thing. Like, it doesn't match your whole face. It does key points, how high are your eyes and everything. And so they found out in the Asian market, anybody's face unlocks your phone because the points that they use, they're different in Americans, I guess, but a lot of the Chinese are so similar that the points they use are not differentiating enough in that market. So that's
even when you use your fingerprint on your phone, as you watch it, when you lock in your fingerprint, it does do a very thorough imprint of your fingerprint. It's not picking out 3 or 4 spots where your fingerprint happens to be and saying, okay, this is good enough. A lot of people have falsely gone to prison because of false identification, because of faulty memory. You know, if you're not used to seeing Asian, a person of Asian heritage, and the police pull up with some guy in the back seat of the car with handcuffs on him, they walk you over to the rear passenger window and say, "Is that him?" I mean, if you saw an Asian commit a crime, and then you see an Asian handcuffed, clearly in custody, clearly the suspect in the back of a police car, what are the odds that you're going to see him and go, "Oh yeah, that's the person"? And now you're not under any trauma, sudden, unexpected events. You're merely there. There's no danger to you. Your policeman around you. He's locked up in the back of a police car. Now you're going to take your time and memorize the guy's face. So when you go into court,
you're
very clear.
Now you've seen him 50 times already.
Memory, right?
Yeah.
So
I mean, these dogs are almost a perfect example of that. I mean, most people are going to look at you've got two Dobermans that look very similar. To most people who don't look at Dobermans all day, they'll say, "Oh, are those dogs identical twins?"
And they happen to have the same mother.
Yeah, but
different fathers.
You know the difference. Like, I know one of them's got cropped ears and the other one doesn't.
Correct.
So I can differentiate them. But to anyone else, "Oh, it's a big brown dog."
Right.
You know, it's the same, whether it's a person or an animal. And it's, you know, it is that thing. It's you know, like you said, if you're used to seeing a lot of people of one race, you'll be able to differentiate them because
you're already
noticing differences. But if you rarely see someone of that race, you kind of like, I guess, you know, let's say you go to a car convention and there's 5 different cars and you see the Lamborghini and you like it. you're going to remember that car because its features stand out from the rest. But if you go to a car convention, there's five different Lamborghinis, you might, you know, maybe if you, hey, if you, you know, if you get into it enough, you might start seeing the differences between them. But
and then think about how we are used to describing somebody. The guy who took the bike, describing white male. Oh, is it an Italian? Is he from Sweden? Is he German? English? I mean, boilerplate American. What does an American look like nowadays?
Yeah.
So even our own verbiages and our own, what's been built into us, can be deceptive. It's really, I was thinking the other day, I was in a group of Christian men. These are all married men, families, great jobs. I mean, these guys are making good money. And not a single one of them meets the profile we see on TV or in movies of your thuggish, black, you know, ghetto guy. And yet, that's what's built into us to think. You see, you know, you take an African-American guy who just got out of prison, let's say, and he was guilty, but now he's released. And then you take a black banker. They're approximately the same age. They both get dressed to go to the gym to work out. How are you going to pick them apart? Because they're just men of a particular skin color. And yet we have programmed ourselves to see both of them as potential threats by the American society.
Yeah.
Very disturbing when you start thinking about some of these things. And I'll tell you that one of the things that really troubles me is the racism that is built into each one of us just by commercials, television programs, news reports, movies. They're always trying to put fear into us, and they like to associate it with particular groups of people. When I'm 61 years old, I'm almost 62 now. When I was growing up, and if you had tattoos, you better have served in the Navy, because that's the only guys that had tattoos. And maybe some guys from the Army or Marines. But if you had a tattoo and weren't a ex-serviceman, then you were a thug. You wouldn't get certain jobs. Nowadays, seems like half the girls have tattoos, you know, that you meet, and they're nice people. They're just regular folks. They just happen to have a choice in how they want to appear.
Yep. Yeah, now it's more of an artistic thing than a gang affiliation thing.
Yes, and still today, wherever you live, you should be aware of this distinction. I'm in the Austin, Texas area. You go to a neighborhood we have called Westlake Hills or Northwest Austin or Terrytown, black male driving an older vehicle that it does not look like it's worth a lot of money, suspected criminal. Black male driving a brand new Mercedes, depending on how he looks or is dressed, is either a professional or a drug dealer. And I mean, that's reality, whether some people choose to blind themselves to that or not. I know I'm kind of focusing on the African-American issue here today because it's easier to do that. If you're in a Hispanic neighborhood in a large city, you know what it means if you drive over to the ritzy part of town and you don't have a certain emblem on your windshield to let you into the gated community or whatever, you are considered lesser in our society because you have darker skin. That's just the way it is.
And we were talking earlier about how this is, it's something that, you know, we see a lot of all these people showing up on social media now where, you know, someone's calling the cops like, oh, there's a black person in my pool, and they're harassing him. Do you have your identification? Are you a resident here? You know, all this other stuff. Or you know, someone's sitting in their car and you know, somewhere. All this stuff that we're seeing now, and a lot of people are blaming Trump for this. But I think it's almost like, you know, what they say is true. It's not that Trump is turning people into racists, but what a lot of people said about Trump is that, you know, we like him because he's different and he speaks his mind. And I think because of that, people are starting to kind of speak their mind. These things that they knew were like, okay, maybe I shouldn't say that because maybe that's offensive and maybe I'm jumping to a conclusion here. No, I want to be like Trump. I want to speak my mind. And you know, the first conclusion that they jump to in their head is like, oh, that must be true. I'm gonna do something about it.
People used to be a lot more cautious before they would insult somebody's integrity or say something that might impinge upon somebody's reputation. Now, see something, say something. Mm-hmm. Well, how are you seeing something? Well, if you walk around with the see something, say something mantra running through your brain, you're looking for criminal or dangerous behavior. Well, anyone can be made to look out like a criminal if you have a preconceived idea in your mind. I would prefer that if you see something that is suspicious and goes to that, you know, level of, I need to tell somebody. That's one thing. But you just drive around looking for something like all these volunteer neighborhood police officers. You know, they're not cops. They haven't gone through an academy. They're wannabes. They stay up and watch reruns of the old cops shows and Law and Order and stuff like this. Is that the kind of person you want in your jury who runs around thinking everybody except their own little clique is a criminal and needs to be snitched on, told on, called in on? It's troubling to me as someone who, you know, I was born in the mid-50s. When I grew up, I learned early on that people have the right to have their opinions. They may be jerks, but they have a right to their opinion. They have a right to freedom of speech, to say things that aren't popular. There's kind of a twofold message I give on this. If someone's a racist, a Klansman type person, or, you know, I'll throw it on the other side, a violent black militant who wants to kill all white people, I want those guys talking. I want to know who they are. And one side of me, it's like, you know what, if my neighbor hates Asians, well, my kids are a quarter Asian. I need to know this. So let him talk. Let his so-called hate speech spew forth. Hate is a subjective word. It depends on, you know, the, it's hard to make a connection with the young people today when you talk about Hitler and the Nazis because, you know, that was so many years ago. We could bring it a lot closer to home with some examples. But the bottom line on that is people get pushed and swayed into taking these positions and becoming that way. Nobody's born a racist. Nobody's born with a predisposition to rape and murder and do these evil things that we see. Something happens to take them down that direction. And I'm not talking about someone I suppose who's a sociopath or psychopath, but I even wonder on those people, if things had happened differently in their lives, how would they have ended up? We don't know.
Right.
But the whole issue of hate speech is very troubling. It's always been illegal to yell fire in a crowded theater. You know, there are things that put people at danger. But maybe we ought to let some of these people who are exposing themselves for who they are and drawing like-minded people to them, let them do it. Let's keep an eye on them because they've exposed themselves for what they are.
And that's so an interesting topic comes up with that, and that's the a lot of people are talking about this. I think it's the what is it? Trust her or trust women. This thing that they're doing where, you know, they want a woman to basically be able to say this guy raped me,
right?
And don't need evidence, don't need anything. And there's two sides to that. There's either yes, she has the right guy, and it was consensual, and then she changed her mind. There's all those conditions. And then there's, it was that guy. I'm pretty sure it was him. And I've seen cases where, you know, they basically, you know, the police, they go and they find this guy, and they vaguely fit the description, and they convince the victim that this is the right guy. And she doesn't know because she was terrified in the moment. She doesn't remember anything. And they end up convicting this guy. And there was one that I saw where, you know, they had like one of those, you know, Maury or one of those talk shows, they brought these people back together after he was released from prison and found factually innocent 10 years later after he spent a decade in prison. And of course, the woman apologizes to him. I'm so sorry. My judgment was clouded and all this other stuff. There's so many different ways that can go wrong. But then there's, you know, I guess people are kind of pulling on the heartstrings about, but what about these poor women? And it's a bad situation that, you know, you wouldn't wish that on anybody. But at the same time, you don't want to make things worse by putting an innocent person in prison.
Yeah, you know, that's most people I have found that show up for jury duty. They will admit that they walked in, saw the defendant, and thought some version of, I wonder what he did. They don't look over there and say, due to the only presumption in a court of law is a presumption of innocence in a criminal case. That's the only presumption. None of them walk in going, wow, what is that innocent man being accused of? And they better have enough evidence for me to be willing to bet my reputation and name on, and particularly since it could go all the way from just a conviction, which can ruin your, you know, assassinate your character, all the way up to a death penalty case. When we have a citizen accused, we owe him, the Constitution says we owe him the right to make sure that he's getting a fair trial. You know, a lot of judges will say, oh, well, can you be fair to a potential juror? Oh, I can be fair. Who's going to say, no, I can't be fair? I'm not a fair person. I'm typically a jerk.
Only the guy who wants to get off of jury duty.
Yes, the ones that are smart enough, if that's what they choose to do. Oftentimes, defense attorneys and prosecutors will also jokingly remark, well, we got stuck with the 6 or 12 people who were too dumb to get out of jury service. And that's a sad thing because of where we've allowed our system to go to. Judges, I'll put, you know, a lot into this statement. Judges are more inclined, a majority of judges are more inclined to harm the defendant than they are to favor the defendant. Most of them were prosecutors. They have to believe in the system. They work in it. They're an integral part of it. They're a very, you know, extremely important part of the judge. Just the way a judge can, the inclination of his voice when he makes a ruling, or how he looks at a defense attorney and sometimes rolls their eyes, or, you know, another objection, these kinds of, they actually do this in court. They rarely disrespect the prosecutors. Judges will sit there and watch a police officer get caught in a lie on the stand and do nothing. That is an hour-long discussion right there on why that occurs, how it occurs, why it is allowed to continue to occur. I personally believe we need to do something to stop this pressure on policemen to get a conviction, because it clouds their judgment, clouds their testimony. Sometimes they honestly make a mistake on the stand. So I'm not one of the proponents of filing perjury charges against police officers. Certainly if they mistakenly gave wrongful testimony. But even ones who kind of push the envelope, they need to be brought back in the fold, training, warnings, maybe days off, to send a message to the others. Because if you just terminate somebody, he's the one bad apple. And you don't really get down into the deeper deception of the system that they're being taught that. They're being taught to get the conviction. I can say when I was a young police officer, I was told in the prosecutor's office before I testified on a number of occasions, don't bring that up. Don't answer that question if the defense attorney asks it, unless he asks it in the exact specific manner where you have to say yes. Otherwise, fudge it. Or say no if you can say no. Find a way. Because we have to win. See, it's a team then. You watch these TV shows, it's always a team. Victims, witnesses, cops, prosecutors, judge, versus the guilty client and his defense attorney who's a sleazeball. That's what you see all the time on TV. when I was growing up, we had Perry Mason. I think only one of Perry Mason's clients was guilty, and Perry Mason proved it in the trial. Because, you know, we used to have a presumption of innocence. People used to actually go into trial, and they would look at their fellow citizens on the jury and go, thank God, now I have a chance for myself to be shown that I'm innocent. I need to be acquitted. They've saved my good name. Now, that doesn't give you back your money from paying the lawyer. You never get the feathers back in the pillow of the people that heard you got arrested and they think badly about you and your family and everything else.
And then we saw, I think it was a judge around here, someone running for judge, and their sign said something about they're going to be tough on crime.
Tough on crime, maximum, Mary, the victim's advocate. A judge is supposed to be a neutral, unbiased.
The referee.
Yes.
Of the game, in the court.
Sure.
The referee on the tennis court.
Both sides follow the rules. And it is. I've had judges before. A prosecutor will make an objection. A young prosecutor learning his job, her job. I can't sustain that objection. I have to overrule it. Did you mean hearsay instead? It's like, well, judge, why don't you just make the objections for them?
Yeah.
I had a judge early in my career ask the prosecutor, after I had objected, how he should rule. Just a district court felony case. And I was just blown away. I was in trial in Lockhart, Texas one time in a felony case. I yelled out objection, and the prosecutor said, overruled. And my response was, Your Honor, why don't we just let him make the rulings, because y'all are ruling the same way every time anyway, which got me chewed out in chambers. But it was getting old. I had a judge in Austin one time. I made four objections in a row. Well, I say in a row, within about 10 questions. All four were good objections. All four, when the judge overruled my objections, on appeal, all four of those objections, the appellate court would have said the objection should have been sustained, the defense attorney was correct, but it was harmless error. In other words, it didn't rise to the point of a mandatory mistrial or overturning of a conviction if a conviction resulted. Well, on the fifth objection, overruled, I said, Your Honor, you're wrong. My objections are correct. You keep making harmless errors. This was a career prosecutor who's now a judge, appointed by a Republican governor. I said, you're continually overruling my valid objections, and the jury's going to start thinking that I'm either a moron, but they're also going to start thinking that all my objections are incorrect and this should be coming in. Oh, he cleared the courtroom immediately, took us back into chambers, and we fleshed it all out. He called it was his first trial as a district court judge. He called a couple of the other judges, talked about what was going on. We came back into court, started the trial again. I didn't have one more objection overruled in the trial. I make valid objections, because you do look like a moron if you just start objecting because they're hurting me, because then the jury knows that you're just, a knucklehead.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to stop the rolling ball. And I can see in a courtroom, if a jury is seeing what was going on in that case, they're thinking, wow, bad lawyer over there, he's making these ridiculous objections. The judge keeps having to correct him. Obviously, the prosecutor's doing everything right. And oftentimes, lawyers, criminal defense lawyers, will be criticized in an appeal because they didn't make certain objections. I've talked to a lot of my colleagues, and they would tell you, I didn't want to make an objection because sometimes it looks like you're hiding the ball. We're not trying to hide the ball. Other times, the judge is going to overrule me. Even though he shouldn't, he will. I know this judge, and I'll look back. So they just let certain things come in, hoping they don't hurt that much.
Wow. Here's another one. there's I think you heard it from it was one of these lawyers that was at one of these events with us, who said his kid just came home from school and Dare told him if he ever gets arrested not to ask for a lawyer because it makes him look guilty. And the more I thought about that, like, I'm like, it had to be fifth grade or earlier, so what does that make me, 7 or 8? When we had Dare, not too many memories from back there, but I'm like, do I remember that happening in mine too? I don't know if that's just a memory I fabricated, but.
I talked to someone raising funds for Dare the other day. Had items you could make a donation and pick up. They were with the Dare program. And I told them that I no longer supported Dare because I believe their position of prohibition of marijuana is invalid. And I disagreed with it. Therefore, I wasn't going to give them money. And the person told me that they had taken marijuana off of their prohibited list. They no longer, I don't know.
Interesting.
I didn't go to the website confirm it or anything. I trust the person who's telling me the truth. What bothered me about this whole issue of if you get an attorney, then you must be guilty, which is not only taught to in programs like that, but a lot of people repeat that in court. People, the veneer, which is the name for the panel that you select the jury from, they'll say things like, oh, if you don't testify, you must be guilty because I would testify. And why wouldn't I cooperate with the police when I'm pulled over? I don't need a lawyer. I don't do anything wrong. Well, that's what a large number of my clients used to believe until they got arrested. And then all of a sudden, I cooperated, I answered the questions, I did the test, I wasn't intoxicated, now I'm in handcuffs, being taken to jail, and why should I cooperate with you anymore? You're going to ruin my life, cause me to lose my job, marital problems, could lose my house now, get a black mark on me that will never go away because I cooperated. It's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been stopped in areas that I know they were looking for drugs. Like within 2 minutes, the another canine unit pulled up to assist the sheriff. And, you know, they asked, well, do you mind if we search your car? I said, yeah, I mind. Well, why can't we search your car? Are you hiding something? No, I got places to be. What's it to you? Like, and it's... You know, and I find myself, like, I know I'm not supposed to say anything to the cops, but of course, that time I found myself, like, I told them too much, and then they were like, oh, we caught you in a lie. And of course, I said, well, here, my lawyer can explain it better. You want me to get him on the phone? And then they were like, oh, no. But,
it's unfortunate that we've gotten to that place in our society.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that was the thing. Like, I don't know if I'm going to distort this story, but maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. The idea behind the Fourth Amendment against illegal searches was that...
And seizures.
Is that if you're doing something that... Like, if you're in the privacy of your own home and you're doing something that is against the king's will, but, like, nobody outside of your house even knows about it because there's no victim, you're not harming anybody, you're not bothering anybody. It's not like you're playing your music too loud and everyone can hear it down the street. It's, you know, maybe you're smoking a joint. Maybe you're lighting a candle that was imported from the king's land without a tax stamp on it or something. Who knows? The idea was that we shouldn't have these police going door to door, knocking on everybody's door, harassing people, looking for little things that don't really matter. They should only be spending their time, you know, chasing down murderers, or if there's somebody that's, you know, creating a public disturbance in the street, then that's obviously, you don't need a warrant, you don't need, like, that's probable cause, it's right in front of everybody. Did I get that right? Is that kind of true?
Well, you know, you think about the sanctity of your home. Well, nowadays, it's easier for the police and law enforcement to get inside your home than ever before. Now, with the Patriot Act, they can plant bugs in your home, just like they used to do with the mafia. But at least
or just turn on your phone.
Well, at least when they were doing it, or your TV,
yeah.
Smart TV. When they were doing it to the mafia, at least they had probable they at least filled out affidavits that said they had probable cause, and they had to present it to a judge who did a review following the criminal law statutes and the codes of criminal procedure and the constitutions of the state and the country. Under the Patriot Act, they go to an administrative judge, ex parte, who basically, from what most people tend to say, rubber stamped them. Now the prosecutors will argue they don't rubber stamp anything. It's like, okay, how many got rejected of the 300 you submitted? None. That's a rubber stamp. Nobody writes affidavits that well. One out of 300 has got to be rejected for typos or something. Wrong date, wrong address.
Right.
And now our appellate courts, even in the criminal cases, in Texas, when I was a cop, if I wrote down the wrong address on the search warrant, everything was thrown out, fruit of the poisonous tree. Now, according to our Court of Criminal Appeals many years ago, ruled typos don't matter. That's just a typo. The officer meant to put the correct address. He just happened to hit three of the wrong numbers because he's not a good typist. He meant to say a white house with brown trim. He said a greenhouse with red trim. That's a typo. Now, according to our Supreme Court, the officers hit the wrong house by accident. But once they went inside the house, they found some marijuana plants. Well, then it's a good faith mistake followed up by a crime in their presence. That's good.
So does anyone get off by saying, well, I gave my drug dealer a note asking for Tylenol, but there was a typo and I got marijuana instead.
Exactly. That's not going to happen. I tell you what, so many of my clients, and when I was actively practicing, I'm not right now, I would always hear from people, that's not ever going to happen. That doesn't happen to regular people until they're the regular person who gets arrested. Then all of a sudden they're like, I can't believe how I got treated. They yelled at me. They cursed at me. They threatened me. If I wouldn't take these tests, I was going to jail. If I wouldn't blow on the machine, they were going to suck the blood out of my veins. Things like this, you know, if you think about who I would typically encounter in a DWI practice, anyone who drives a car. I used to say anybody who drinks and drives, even if it's just one drink. Now I say anyone who drives. They can accuse you of prescription medication legally that you're taking and say, even though it's legal medication and you're taking the correct dosage, you've lost some control over your physical and mental faculties.
And then there's the people who, there's a couple cases I heard of. One was somebody was driving a car and a passenger's prescription medication fell out of their pocket. Oh yeah, officer, search my car. I don't have anything. And then they find someone, or this one guy lent a car to his son. His son picked up a friend and their friend dropped like a dime bag in the side somewhere. Yeah, officer, search my car. I've got nothing to hide. Well, and then they find that, and they
technically, if I'm driving down the road, I get pulled over, and the police officer looks and sees my wife's prescription bottle of medication, and she's not in the car with me. Depending on what that prescription is for, I could be arrested. Now, the good common sense of a prosecuting attorney would get that case either not filed or dismissed, hopefully. But maybe if I'm an unpopular person. Yeah. Or the wrong skin color, or the wrong ethnicity, or whatever. Who knows? Are the prosecutors tough on crime?
Or he's low on his conviction rate?
Yeah, I keep looking. For the month? You were talking about the judges' campaigns. I keep looking for the sign that says, I will treat all citizens with respect, and the Constitution, too. I'll respect it. And
that guy will never get elected.
Yeah, it's frightening. I'll make sure that the citizen accused is presumed innocent in my courtroom unless and until he's proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
And that's an interesting thing, too. When a jury reaches their verdict, the judge can overturn the verdict, but only in the favor of the defendant. He can't. Is that right?
That typically, in your Texas courtrooms, a judge does not disturb a jury's decision. I have heard of rare occurrences in which a defense attorney has moved for a judge to reconsider an earlier directed verdict motion and grant it, but that is few and far between.
I'm sure it's rare.
Yeah,
but it's legal, isn't it?
Yeah, you're giving me a very broad, vague.
Like if I think
hypo
the,
here.
I think the condition is something like if the evidence is so broad that the
so overwhelming of innocence.
Yeah, that the jury could not have, in their right minds, said that the guy is guilty. Then the judge can overturn that.
The judge should have made a ruling well before when it goes to the jury. I've had a judge before not grant a directed verdict that I made after the prosecution arrested. And it's like all the court personnel were like, he's not going to grant this motion. There was no evidence, really. And the judge told me, he was like, you did such a good job. The jury will do the right thing. And they did do the right thing. But what if they had not done the right thing? I mean, I was very upset and went and had to have a meeting with the judge later to voice my feelings because I don't trust how for the police to have arrested, for the prosecutor to have indicted and taken to trial that case, why would I not be concerned that a jury might misinterpret evidence and convict in a case like that? Tell you what, I always try to remind jurors that your decision basically is final. You don't get to come back tomorrow after you sleep on it and go, oh, wow, I really have a doubt about that evidence now that I've thought about it. You don't get to come back either way, either direction. So
yeah, there was even, there was a guy I talked to, I can't remember his name, right? It was Michael something. He was, there was something to do with his parents split. His dad married another woman. The other woman had her own kids, and they wanted to split now, his new parents, or his, stepmom. And she convinced her daughter to accuse this guy of
sexual behavior,
And I mean, this thing, he was released from prison later on, and there was like a 60 Minutes show on it and everything. But what was really fascinating to me was the daughter was, I think she was like 7 or so, she was real young when she made that accusation in court at her mother's direction. When she grew older, like we're talking like another 5-10 years later, she's older, she's almost an adult. She goes back to the judge and she tells the judge, I lied about all that because my mom coerced me and all this other stuff. He's innocent. He didn't do any of that stuff. And the judge basically threatened her, saying, you don't say that. You don't, like, I don't want to hear another word about this.
Right.
Because he didn't want to have to go back and open his case back up and overturn it and realize that he made a mistake.
And then, in their viewpoint, and then bring every case into question. Because that's how they think. Where they should just be thinking about this specific case. I've represented a number of people back in the 90s on false accusations of family violence in divorce situations and this and that. Then there's counseling to get back together. And in no way do either one of us support spousal abuse or sexual assault or drunk driving or any of this stuff. It's what we're talking about is the wrongful accusation, arrest, and the subsequent conviction. But the so-called victim in these cases would come back then and go, I was upset, I was angry. He was cheating on me, I found out, so I slapped him and he grabbed my arm, but that's not what I told the police. But now I want to tell the truth because he shouldn't have been convicted. Or we're going to trial and they're trying to tell the prosecutor now that they shouldn't have misled the police and given this inaccurate story. And the prosecutors will tell them, you'll either testify to what you told the cops or we're going to charge you with false statement. You'll be arrested. You'll be taken to trial. You'll be convicted. And, you got to know whether your spouse or significant other loves you when they're faced with that choice of either continuing to lie and you get convicted, possibly, or they're going to get convicted.
Yeah.
I mean, why would they ever put someone in that position? And they do it all the time.
Yeah.
You brought up something earlier about
Try to remember, but I want to bring this one back up. There was, for those of you following the Brian Ellison case, he's been at war with these cops. He actually has a bumper sticker that says hashtag war on cops. He's been trying to expose these murders that they did. Unjust, excessive force, killed two people.
That's in the Detroit area?
Yeah. Yes. And he's, what is it? Something Oak. What? Not White Oak. That's down here. Royal Oak. So he's already on the cops' bad side. They already know him. They already see him. They know he's looking for trouble. He's watching the police. He follows them around. He records them, and he does all this. And they hate him. And so he got into an argument with his wife in the car, and she was like, "I'm not listening to this." Put her earbuds in. He yanked the earbuds out, and she ended up calling the police over this. And the police came, and they arrested him over this. Now I thought, like, okay, no, there's got to be something more to that. Like, maybe she lied on the police report. He uploaded the police report in her own handwriting. Says he came. I was driving. I put the earbuds in. He yanked them out. They scratched my cheek on the way out, and. That's all. That's all that's in the report. No exaggerations, nothing. And they arrested him, and they're trying to prosecute him on that.
Doesn't surprise me at all. That doesn't surprise me if they were to do the same thing on someone who has a "I love the cops" bumper sticker. It's maybe not as bad now as it was a few years ago, but in Texas, complaint of pain, Class A misdemeanor assault, family violence, goes on your record, you lose your right to possess firearms federally, because I used to make an example of, and in no way defending, real spousal abuse, but let's say a woman finds out that her husband's having an affair on the side, and it's going to destroy her family. They're going to have to get a divorce. The kids are going to get pulled out of their private school. I can go on and on with this, but so she grabs him by the arm and squeezes him and says, "Please, I'll go to counseling. I'll do whatever we need to do. Let's make our marriage work." And he goes, "Ouch. 911. Touched me. Complain of pain. It hurt." She goes to jail. That's all it takes.
Wow.
That's it. Pull your hair. I had a police officer client of mine who's arrested because his police officer wife went off on him over nothing. She was having a bad period in her life. And she's cursing him out, saying all kind of stuff about his mom and this and that. And she's got her door hands like this on the door jamb. So he's a prisoner in the bedroom. He said, "After 15 minutes, dude, I couldn't take it anymore." What do they teach in all the violence classes? Get out of those environments before you lose your temper. If you're starting to get emotional, get out of there. That's what they teach you. He said he squeezed his way through her. It's a big guy. But he goes, "I didn't push her. I didn't grab her. I didn't put her in a headlock or an arm bar." He goes, "I squeezed my way past her, and she's holding on the door jamb so hard that when it pulled through, it hurt her fingers." And they arrested him. His own department arrested him. Now, we went through the roof on this thing, ended up getting all charges dropped, and the arrest expunged, and all cost him a lot of money, a lot of pain, emotions. Their marriage ended up not surviving over all the problems it caused. And I just look at that and go, from a society perspective, how is that this blanket rule of complaint of pain, pain arrest? Austin Police Department, I don't know if they currently have this policy because I got out of the family assault violence type defense. But it was arrest both. I mean, can you imagine? You and your wife are having an argument, and it gets a little out of control. I'm not talking no bruising, no hitting, no anything like that. You both push each other, and you're both going to jail. Oh, well, what do we do with the 4-year-old and the 2-year-old?
CPS.
CPS, baby. Get them over here. Now you got Child Protective Services in your life for how long?
Moral of the story.
And then you lose your job.
Don't call the cops.
Yeah, unless you,
unless
you
really,
to.
Yeah. But if that's, I mean, this
but
kind
don't
of.
Don't wait until it gets to that amount of violence. Recognize it before that.
Well, that's an interesting point, too, is de-escalation. Like, it seems like, I don't know if it's everybody's so egotistical that they've got to win every fight, but I mean, the police do it, and a lot of individuals do it, and they, you know, they escalate things. If I get bigger and louder and fight harder, then I'm going to win the argument, instead of saying, look, it really doesn't matter who's going to win here. This is a stupid fight.
Right.
Let me de-escalate this. Let's walk away. Let's cool off and forget about it.
Do you want to be right or reconciled? If you're friends or family, that should be the goal, is reconciliation. We all have bad days. I think what I was trying to remember about earlier was the them and us argument that law enforcement seems to be making now. Right after 911, I was doing just a bare-bones DWI trial. Nothing spectacular. Pulled over for a light, taillight was out. Wasn't, even according to the report, extremely intoxicated, no danger, no nothing. Put a DWI arrest. Prosecutor started her voir dire talking about first responders, the buildings coming down, the danger to police officers and firefighters. And I'm looking around going, where am I, in the Bronx? I mean, well, what's going on here? And when I finally stood up, I said, first, let me tell y'all something, guys. I'm a little offended. I really am. There's no police officer got hurt in this case. No firefighters were involved. No planes crashed into buildings. No people dove out of 75 floors to their death. I said there was no red rubber ball bouncing between two parked cars and a four-year-old's chasing it, and a madman runs him down, and there's blood and bones and brains everywhere. I'm just like, what is this emotional garbage? Try the cases as they are. It's not them and us. If there's any them and us here, it's us, the citizens, who are given the task of supporting the Constitution and defending the rights of the citizen against the state. That's how this country was founded. Yet today it's the state and the people against the Watts, the illegal aliens, against the guy who says something he shouldn't say. I don't know, it's frightening. Just frightening.
Yeah, it is. And we've got some good people out there.
We have great police officers, some great prosecutors. A prosecutor, there's a case right now, they're trying to determine in Texas whether or not the civil Supreme Court of Texas is trying to determine whether or not a prosecutor who was fired because he turned over exculpatory evidence to the defense in a case that was going to felony trial, evidence which tended to show that the defendant was not guilty, against the orders of his district attorney. I want to say it was Corpus Christi. And they're going to review that and give us a ruling, because currently the lower appellate court said that he is not entitled to sue the district attorney for wrongful termination because of a qualified immunity of an office holder. And we are very hopeful, and this is the first time that the Innocence Project has joined in with a prosecutor to try to help him. Because if prosecutors in this state and in this country find out that I have the choice of revealing truthful information that would exonerate this person who's been wrongfully accused, or even if it's just something that would assist them, so the argument can be made that they're not guilty. But if I do that, my boss will fire me. The boss needs to be charged and placed into custody, I believe, because he is using the law to officially oppress the rights of the citizen and of his own employee, threatening you with termination. And then where are you going to get hired? If your lifelong dream is to be a prosecutor, because you believe that's the right thing for you to do as a person. That's the career you want. And all of a sudden you're looking at, well, if I get fired here, who's going to hire me? I got fired for helping the defense? It's just insane. Why we would ever elect people to the top position who would rule like that and fire somebody, just beyond me. When I was a police officer, you know, there was a lot of emotion about cop killers. And you'd hear, why did they even take him into custody? I'm going like, well, what if we execute the wrong guy out there on the street? Then what? The real cop killer walks? I mean, you can't do that. You've got to follow the rules. As you know them. I mean, some of the rules, you know. You know, there's, and I know that there are so many laws right now, regulatory, federally, statewide. People don't even know them. I mean, defense attorneys and prosecutors and judges would miss these questions on a test because they're just overwhelming us.
Yeah, that's one that's, I mean, this is a small one that I've run into a few times where a cop will tell you, I'll charge you with, if you don't give me your ID, I'll charge you with failure to ID.
But they do it.
And they do it. But the reality is, you have to be arrested
refused.
Yeah, and you have to be arrested for a legitimate reason. They can't just...
Well, I'll debate with you on that because if they arrest you, you're...
Yeah, I mean, they got to have like a probable cause.
Well, you can always argue, I'll be found... Yes.
Yeah.
I'll be found not guilty, so therefore it's invalid. No.
Right, right.
Under arrest, you have to identify yourself. But taxation is theft. You send a legitimate tax question, I read this, to four different IRS field offices in the same area, but different offices, and ask for an opinion, you get four different opinions. You let an IRS auditor audit your books and get a finding. Have a different IRS auditor come in without knowing what was done and do a finding. He won't find what the first guy found, and he'll find something different, or maybe nothing at all. The federal tax system is just unbelievable. I don't see how the CPAs can stay up with it. Just incredibly difficult, if it's even valid at all, which I tend to believe is not even valid.
Yep.
Our income tax system.
That's one of the things I'm always trying to expose, and it's From what I've seen, they use a lot of intimidation. They try to...
Everyone's scared of IRS.
Yeah, they are. Like the banks, here's an example. The banks will send, they'll send a notice of levy, which apparently is, a notice of levy is different than an actual levy somehow, some way. But this thing on the back, it's got all of these statutes written out, you know, it's section A, B, C, and they skip D and they go on to E. But if you go look up D, it says that, you know, this notice of levy is only valid and the bank only has to turn over money to the IRS if it's signed by a judge. And these things are not signed by judges. They're signed by a scribble that doesn't even have a name under it. It's electronically printed. It's got, this document has no legal standing, but they send it to a bank and a bank could say, oh, well, it wasn't signed by a judge. We're going to throw this in the trash. No,
they who bails them out.
Yeah, who's gonna come audit them when they file right. their statement? And you know, when they've got like a million accounts and billions of dollars, they're not gonna mess around with that. Right. Here, Mr. IRS, take the money.
Well, if you go down to the jail any given time of day or night and pull out the approval of the probable cause affidavit and arrests, it has a line underneath it that says magistrate. You better be able to recognize that judge's signature if you want to find out who the judge is. You can't tell. Why in the world don't they have the name and contact information? Police officers on the affidavits, oftentimes you can't tell who they are, how to get a hold of them. You would think that when you're taking away someone's liberty, even if it's
I've never seen an arrest. I've never seen anything.
You get arrested.
I've never signed for a $5 tab at a restaurant on a credit card where it didn't have the name printed out underneath the signature.
Right.
That's $5 versus somebody's freedom or complete access.
You want to vote? You better have an ID.
Yeah.
In
Texas. It's your driver's license.
Right.
It's got your name and your signature. It's clear as day. And even the real court orders, you have, you know.
Hey, go into a convenience store and buy a beer. I'm 60, almost 62 years old. They ID me. I'm like, they'll have the sign that goes, we ID everyone 26 and under. If you think the guy's 25, Why are you asking him for an ID to prove he's over 21? I mean, it's the silliness of everything.
Yeah, what if he's 17 and he looks 27?
It's a good thing they've got that little chart, that little ruler on the door when he grabs a beer and runs out screaming. It's driving him crazy.
Man. All right, well, I think we're at about time, but go to taxationistheft.cars and get one of these cool hats. And
educate yourself.
Educate yourself.
Educate yourself.
Keep watching the show. Share the video. Share the podcast. Get the word out there. And if you do have the opportunity to serve jury duty, go inform the jurors.
Get on there. Oh, that was one thing I was going to point out. I'll end with this. When I was thinking about that hater deal, when you do really have a hater and he wants to get on that jury to convict somebody because that's all he's been dreaming about, every book he reads, every novel, every movie he watches is about Clint Eastwood blowing some guy away. That guy wants to get on a jury, and he wants to convict you, and he wants to send you to prison for the rest of your life. I don't want him on anybody's jury. I wouldn't want him on Hitler's jury. I don't want a juror who does his duty. So, you know what? Maybe we need to let some of these people expose themselves a little bit better to us. And if you ever get in trouble, get yourself good representation in the legal form, because you never know when the haters are going to come after you. You never know. And most likely, if it's in a courtroom, they're wearing badges, they're wearing mantles, they're wearing titles. It's not the defense attorney. It's the other one in there fighting for you.
Good advice. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Taxation is theft.
Not guilty.